There's been some speculation that if the EFL could take the ownership away from Reading, which we don't know if they've got the power to do, that there would be then a 28-day period where someone else would have to take over the club. If it didn't, in theory, the club could cease to exist. Have I got it? Have I got it right? Is it, can it really be that bad? Hello, everybody. Welcome to Money in Football. Although this is possibly going to bleed into a little bit of a fan view podcast. On Sunday night, I was thinking, what can we do for Money in Football? And I reflected and realized we'd not really revisited what had been happening at Reading, A, since the summer, and B, since their fans very recently got a game abandoned. Let me introduce you to Reading fan and Planet FPL patron, Martin Paul. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks, James. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. I woke up Monday morning and messaged Martin and went, can ya? Like the thought afterwards, let's get you involved, because we've obviously done a few bits and pieces on Reading over the last couple of years, the last being in the summer. But before we talk to club, mate, introduce yourself to the patrons for anyone who may not know who you are.
Yeah, so I'm Martin. I've been Planet FPL patron, I think pretty much from the beginning of your patron. I'm part of the Man On podcast. I'm not really a fantasy football veteran at all. I got into it really during COVID and with the Champ Man FPL scene. So some people that were into that might remember that I did sort of weekly game week previews for that and sort of helped out with the hosting during season three. So yeah, it was through that really. And James, your hosting of the match days on season one that I kind of became aware of yourself and Planet FPL and sort of the wider FPL community, really. So yeah, that's my kind of into being a Planet FPL patron and FPL. I've been a Reading fan for over 30 years, pretty much from the John Madejski era onwards. So, I mean, not funnily, but ironically enough, we were in a not too dissimilar position to what we are now, I suppose, and sort of saw through the John Madejski era up to an eighth place Premier League finish, and sadly kind of back to where we are again now.
Talk about Man On a little bit for those who might not know it.
Yeah, so again, largely based off of the Champ Man FPL scene, we kind of made some content for that, and we chat weekly about FPL. We do a bit of gaffer content most weeks. We do a Sky Pod now and again. It's nothing too formal or particularly organized. It's just yeah, we just get together and have a chat and stick it out there on a weekly basis. It's grown slowly but steadily. We get, yeah, it's good fun. We get a decent amount of engagement from it. It's good fun for me. So
good stuff. So you mentioned Reading, kind of feel like they've been through this before. I'm guessing you were pretty young. What's your your memories of that when John Madejski took over the club?
Yeah, as you say, I was pretty young, so they're pretty vague, to be honest. I mean, I have vague memories of you know, protests happening and it's kind of being on the news, and you know, chat about were we going to be merged with Oxford and called the Thames Valley Royals.
Yeah, I remember.
And all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I was pretty young, so you know, I didn't fully understand it, but I just had that, you know, that sense and that kind of awareness that there was worry and disgruntlement and there were protests happening. And then obviously John Madejski came in and kind of steadied the ship and moved us into a new stadium and all that kind of stuff. So
I felt like you might have this wrong from the outside, but a kind of a little bit like Jack Walker at Blackburn. That kind of vibe of, with respect, not a huge club. The investment came. Now the investment, the Premier League had grown as such that you weren't probably going to run right through and qualify for the Champions League and stuff like that. Obviously, it's built this really nice new stadium, and it's a lovely stadium. Finished eighth in the Premier League, as you said.
Yeah.
At that point, looking to get yourselves established, right? You probably thought, well, this is easy. This is the dream, isn't it?
Yeah, it all looked so promising at that point. I think we had planning permission to expand the stadium to, I think, 36,000. There was going to be a new train station built from Reading Central right up to the ground,
Yeah, it needs that.
and all that. I mean, it's there now, finally. It took 20 years longer than they said, but it's there now. So yeah, it looked really promising, but obviously that was all predicated on if we stay up the second year, and of course we didn't. There was I it was such a big opportunity. I mean yeah, going back, obviously, we lost Steve Sidwell for free to Chelsea. It was 1 year too many for the likes of Graham Murty, and we just didn't replace them, and yeah, we paid the price for it, unfortunately.
Fun games. I remember the 6-4. I'm sure you do as well. And you also had a
Yeah.
7-4 as well that you lost at Portsmouth as well.
Yeah, that's right. I was there at the Lane for the 6-4. I was there at the
Who were they?
seven. So I was there for the 7-4 as well. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the only occasion I actually managed to get to White Hart Lane. One of my main memories from it is A, the game was absolutely crazy, but my knees were absolutely battered. That away end in the corner, the seats were so close together.
I went to Park
But
Lane at Tottenham.
yeah. But
It's a little
yeah,
bit different in a
good
new
fun.
place, mate.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah.
That's a rare one. You're probably the first person I've ever spoke to who can claim to fame and say, yeah, I was in the way in and saw my team score four times twice and lost both.
Berbatov was absolutely something on another level that day, but
He was.
yeah.
Okay, let's talk about now. And where Reading are at. I firstly kind of want to get your opinion on what me and Suj discussed in the summer, which was our closing point in the last pod we did on Reading, was basically saying that we thought Reading would be an attractive proposition for a potential buyer. And despite the problems you're having, I saw a former chief executive of yours had said recently that there's sort of seven to eight interested parties. Do you
Yeah.
see Reading as an attractive proposition?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on the terms of the sale, doesn't it? Because we're in so much debt. Like, how much debt is Dai Young actually willing to write off? Because realistically, the level of debt we've got is going to be bigger than the value of the football club. So that makes it complicated, doesn't it? And the other complication is that the football club, the land around the stadium and the training ground are three separate companies. And one of the big concerns that the Reading fans have got, and the worrying rumours that are coming out, is that Dai Young and his and Pang, the CEO, have been engaging with people to potentially try and sell these things separately, which would be a disaster for us, really.
Why?
So,
Just to clarify that.
well, because I mean, because we've got the stadium is brand new, right? So one of the things that Dai has done is he's built this new training ground at Burwood. We're a Category One academy, so we're essentially a Premier League level academy. Our academy teams play Premier League level. And that's part of what would make us an attractive proposition, right? To have that asset. But if he's trying to sell it separately, and he's trying to sell the land around the stadium separately again, and all he's trying to do is offload Reading FC PLC that's got £200 million of debt, just kind of get rid of that and sell the other two things separately, then that's not so attractive, is it? If you're the one that
Yep.
wants to buy the actual football club. So as I say, it is potentially an attractive proposition, but it depends on the terms of the sale. If you're going to get all three of these things together, then for a fair price, then yes, potentially it is a good prospect.
Has there been any speculation on the price, what you'd potentially accept to sell the club at this stage?
No, not really. And as I say, this is what I struggle to get my head around, really, because, as I say, the level of debt realistically is bigger than the value of the football club. I mean, there was talk about William Storey, the guy that had the F1 team and all that malarkey that didn't go particularly well, was willing to pay £50 million for it. But I mean that seems mad. I mean, that would be a record for a League One club by some distance. And as I say, given the level of debt that's associated with it, it just doesn't really make any sense. So, as I say, that's my worry, really, is that he's just, and that's all the fans' worry, is that he's basically trying to just run the club, the actual football club, into the ground, so that then dissolves, and he can just sell the training ground and the land around the stadium and recoup some of his money. That's the big worry.
But then he doesn't get any money for the club either way, then, right?
No, he wouldn't get any money for the club, but he could recoup some money for selling, the training ground and the land around the stadium, because they're two separate
I get
companies.
it. And that's where the speculation will come of. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Many people be familiar with the abandonment of the game against Port Vale. What triggered that for a point amongst the fan base to kind of rise above and actually basically take matters into their own hands? We've seen these tennis balls being thrown onto the pitch regularly at games, which I think got highlighted quite a bit in your defeat to Eastleigh in the second round of the FA Cup, which brought a bit of attention because it was shown on ITV, I think, or BBC, certainly on British television in the UK, which brought a bit of attention to it. But that's a different level, isn't it? Getting a game actually postponed is it's last resort, isn't it?
It is, and it was a little bit off the cuff. It wasn't it wasn't a planned event by Sell Before We Die or anything like that. Oh, I think what triggered it was late in that week. I think sort of Wednesday, Thursday, there was it was starting to come out that the CEO was arranging a sale of Nelson Abbey and Tom Holmes to Luton for pennies, really, sort of over the head of Mark Bowen, who's our sort of director of football, and obviously Ruben Sellers, the manager. So this kind of this kind of idea that the CEO was trying to asset strip the squad, basically, that's what triggered the events in the Port Vale game. I think it was just like a last straw.
It wasn't a planned. It wasn't something that had been going around on social media. Because Sell Before We
No.
Die, this group, which many people would be familiar with, is a great hashtag. They're not the Supporters Trust, are they? Two separate entities. Am I right in saying
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, so Star are the Supporters Trust. Sell Before We Die is separate. There are, I think, certainly four major representatives from Star that are part of Sell Before We Die.
Yeah,
But
there's a
yeah,
bleed
then
in between the two
yeah,
groups, isn't there? Yeah. I've seen, is it Caroline? Someone, I've forgotten her name now.
yeah, that's
I've seen her
yeah.
quite a bit on Sky doing bits and talking about the club. You weren't at the game.
No.
Were you, how were you following it at the time, the Port Vale game?
So I was listening to it on Radio Berkshire. So yeah, I was following it through that, and I think it wasn't surprising that it happened, because I say there were, after the news about Tom Holmes and Nelson Abbey to Luton, there were kind of, it was kind of bubbling up on, Twitter communities and on the forums and things like that, and it did feel like, that there might be a pitch invasion. So it was kind of expected, really. You could kind of tell in the commentators' voices they're trying to commentate on the game, but there was that feeling that, something's going to happen in a minute. So yeah, it wasn't a surprise, even though it wasn't, organized well in advance.
Was you sitting there thinking, shit, this is points deduction? Or does that not matter at the moment? Because that seemed to be the vibe I got at the moment. It's almost like, and it's suspended 3 points deduction, basically. If you do it again, you'll get the points deduction if you don't find slap on the wrist. Because I think the EFL obviously realised they fucked up with Reading quite a lot here and have some sympathies. But were you thinking, oh, Christ, this is putting us more in trouble in terms of the on-field stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that that wasn't the outcome, but I wouldn't say I was worried about it, because, it's bigger than that. I think, a lot of us Reading fans said in the summer, if this time next year we're preparing for a season in League Two, but we've got a new ownership and we've got a future ahead of us, then we'll take that. And I think that's still the position now, really. Yeah, it's bigger than the 3 points. I'm surprised about it, and it's a massive decision, really, because we're Port Vale are the only team that separate us from the relegation places at the moment. If they'd been awarded a 3-0 win, it would have made a massive difference to both of us in terms of a relegation fight. It's big. So I'm surprised that wasn't the outcome, to be honest.
Results on the pitch have actually not been terrible, have they? I think it's one defeat in
Yeah.
eight since the Eastleigh
12
game, I
now.
think. 12.
Yeah, in all competitions, that includes a few like EFL Trophy games. But yeah, one defeat in 12. The away performances are really picking up. We actually last night against Stevenage, that was our first away midweek win for 3 years.
Wow.
The away win at Wickham earlier in the season was our first away win at all for over a year. So, but yeah, it is picking up. We were 10 points adrift at one point, and we moved out of the relegation places for the first time this season last night. So on the pitch, it's picking up actually.
Think Ruben Sellers knew what he was getting himself into when he took this job?
No, I don't think so. But he's been fantastic, to be honest. He's handled it really well. And I mean, credit to him for still being here, to be honest. I mean, he says, like, his family are happy in the area. He really wants to make a go of it here, and I think he genuinely, I believe him when he says that, because if it wasn't true, he wouldn't be here. He'd have gone already. So I'd really love it if we could, get some new ownership and Selez can be the one to take us forward, because he's been absolutely brilliant. We're lucky to have him.
Yeah, we spoke in the, when we spoke in the summer as well. We spoke about Theo Walcott. Remember us talking about that? And this speculation that you were going to offer Theo Walcott a big contract. And I kind of screamed at the time, like, stop repeating same mistakes in terms of salaries for players coming towards the end of their careers. You've also been kind of asset stripped a little bit now. It's obviously got very serious. It's good to see that the on-field stuff has improved. And also, what's really been striking through my research since the Port Vale game is the amount of kind of understanding and assistance from smaller clubs with respect lower down the pyramid who are in your area basically and similar who have been posting stuff in their programs to inform local people about the situation of what's going on with Reading. And despite what you'd said about Port Vale, obviously the reaction of them to what happened on the day and since, they could have well had to be in their bonnet about it disrupting them and their season when they're in competition with you. But understand that the relationship between the two clubs has been great. Did your fans raise like £10,000 towards a statue of
That's
someone
right.
from Port Vale?
I think it was around about £10,000. Yeah, they had a campaign going to get a statue of one of their former managers. So I forget his name, but yeah, we raised £10,000 towards that for them. They were great on the day. We're fully in support of what we're doing. Like, didn't kick off at all. There was even we were away at Wigan the following week, and there was even a couple of Port Vale fans in the away end, which I thought was a bit strange, but fair play
And obviously, Wigan have
to
been through
Yeah.
plenty of trouble themselves. We've obviously covered them in the past as well. That Port Vale rearrange game, I think it's coming up soon, isn't it?
This month, yeah. I
And
think
I think
it's next Tuesday or something, yeah.
the two sets of fans want to do something together again, don't they?
Yeah, so there's going to be a red card protest. I think it's something that Port Vale themselves have done in the past. So there's going to be a red card protest on the 16th minute of that game. But yeah, it's not intended to obviously disrupt the game again. There's no intention to do that. But
No,
yeah.
and this is one of three protests being planned by the Sell Before We Die group. So there's that. That's the second of three, which is scheduled for Tuesday, the 20th of February. This coming Saturday, you play Charlton, and it's being labelled "Get That Clown Out of Our Town," where I understand a lot of your fans are going to be dressing up as clowns and having Dai Yonge face masks with blue wigs and stuff. Is that the plan, legitimately?
That's the plan. Yeah. So there's going to be some stuff handed out. Again, like the Sell Before We Die group, have received donations throughout their campaign to help them along. Again, it's tens of thousands of pounds. Again, it's amazing, really. So yeah, that's happening on Saturday, and then there's a London protest thing on the I think it's scheduled for the 25th of February. A bit of a protest march. That one is obviously it's to do with Reading, but I think that is more broadly to do with focus on the EFL and ownership of EFL clubs in general. It's a stand on that as well, and the points that Sell Before We Die are trying to make to the EFL, not just about Reading, but of the future of all EFL clubs and how they should be governed, recommendations that they're putting forward for if we get the independent regulator, what powers they should be given, in law and things like that.
How do you feel about these three different kind of, say, process? The last one, I guess, will be, but kind of almost like events. Is it as much kind of keeping morale up within the supporter base as well? Dress up as clowns at the weekend, and it's not
Yeah.
what I mean by that is he's not going to see people dress up like him with blue wigs and think, yeah, that's it. That's the ceiling point to sell the club, right?
Yeah, well, exactly that. Is it really having any impact on him as an individual? I'm skeptical, but at the same time, that's not to do down anything that's sold before we die or
No,
anybody's
not at
doing.
all.
But yeah, I guess that's the worry, isn't it? Does it impact him? I think the bigger thing for me, as I say, is the pressure that Sell Before We Die are putting on the EFL to make sure this doesn't happen again. That's the bigger aspect of it for me. I mean, if it influences Dae Young, I mean, at all in any way, then obviously that's a success as well. But yeah, the points about safeguarding clubs from getting in this situation again, I think is a big part of what they're doing as well.
It's media stuff as well, isn't it? Particularly this one, this coming Saturday. There'll be enough people. Oh, Reading fans are dressed up as clowns. Why? It's an aware, it's kind of almost like an
Yeah.
awareness raising course, isn't it? So, oh, why have they done that? Okay, this is the, are you, right, people learn enough, and it'll keep it in the media narrative. You've got three events coming up in the next month. It's really kind of pushing what's happening.
Yeah.
Where are we at? Because the club put a statement out after the Port Vale abandonment, saying that, yeah, listening for talks now, the intention is to sell the club. But I got the vibe reading replies that most people just thought that was bullshit.
Yeah, I think what gives me a bit of hope with that is that, because I would have been on the same page. Everything that Dae Yong Pang has come out and said recently, he's done interviews on TalkSport. This is the CEO, by the way, not the owner. He's done interviews on TalkSport. He's met with fan groups and all that. But really, all he says is like what we would want to hear, really. And it's difficult to believe any of it. What gives me hope is that Nigel Howe has been appointed to help the sale along. Now, Nigel Howe is historically a Reading man. He's held various positions at the club in the past, and he's come out and said, I've been brought in to help with the sale. It's nothing to do with the day-to-day running of the club. My role is solely to help get this sale done. Now, Nigel Howe isn't somebody that's going to come in and just be a shill for the owners, right? He's got Reading connections going back a long time. So I think now we've got somebody involved in this sale process that we can actually believe in. And that's a big step forward that we've not had until very recently.
Guy's a difficult man to track down, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Yeah. Allegedly, even for the Chinese government, maybe. I don't know. But
Although, did we recently find out that he likes women pissing themselves?
yeah, there was an accidental thing that happened on Twitter. I think yeah, there was an image on a Twitter account that I think that came up on a video or on screen that wasn't supposed to. So yeah, that was quite amusing.
Is it actually his Twitter account?
It seems to be, yeah. I mean, again, this is Dae Yong Pang, I think, rather than Dae Yong the owner.
Okay.
So it's Dae Yong Pang is the CEO.
Right. That makes it so much better.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, you can obviously see it on Sell Before We Die's Twitter feed, where there's been a video of a woman claiming to urinate on herself, and it's been liked. Basically, which don't piss yourselves laughing when you see it. It's fairly legitimate, actually. What's the worst case here? There's been some speculation that if the EFL could take the ownership away from Reading, which we don't know if they've got the power to do, that there would be then a 28-day period where someone else would have to take over the club. If it didn't, in theory, the club could cease to exist. Have I
Yeah.
got it? Have I got it right? Is it, can it really be that bad?
I suppose technically it could. I think I think what it is at the end of that 28 days, the EFL could revoke Reading's member status, I think.
So the fixtures would
So,
hit the wall. Yeah.
so we would lose our license as an EFL member, is the worst case scenario. I don't think the EFL would actually do that because, I mean, it would be terrible PR for them for a start. You know, how does that help anything? So yeah, I suppose that's the worst case from an EFL sanctions point of view. But the trouble is they don't have the power to force Dai Young into a sale, right? The club and these other two companies, you know, the land around the stadium, the training ground, these are his assets, right? The EFL don't have any power in UK law to forcibly remove those assets from him. So that's where it's tricky. Because what can they do that's actually going to get this guy's attention and actually force him to sell? It's and this is part of what the Sell Before We Die campaign are really pushing on, is say it's not just about getting Dai Young out of our football club. It's about pushing the EFL to make sure this doesn't happen again. So, for example, they're pushing the EFL to, for example, I mean, there's lots of talk about an independent regulator coming in for football, right? So, what part of what Sell Before We Die are campaigning for example, to make sure that this regulator, has the power to properly intervene in these cases where football clubs are in financial distress or heading for insolvency, being mismanaged. So for example, they want the independent regulator to have powers that would be similar to, for example, the way the Competition and Markets Authority has the power to impose penalties to any company that engages in anti-competitive behavior or abuses their position in the market. Or, you know, for charities, for example, there are laws where if a charity is being mismanaged, and, you know, the money it's receiving isn't going to the right places, in UK law, there are powers where, you know, the directors of those charities can be forcibly removed and other trustees put in place. So that's the kind of thing that they're pushing for, that football clubs are given a similar status to, for example, a charity, or, for example, if a football club is being mismanaged, that it's treated in the same way as a business that's, you know, breaking financial regulations or anti-trade regulations or whatever. The same kind of laws and regulations would apply for football clubs.
And this is where, for every Premier League club, and specifically, obviously, the league in itself, think they can look after themselves and don't need an independent regulator. I think you only have to look back and realise that Reading, was it 2008 you went down? I want to say 2008. Portsmouth went in 2010. Like, it's not that long ago, right? Portsmouth was obviously on the floor as well. Wigan went down in what? 2013, I think. There's three clubs there who are now in all in League One, all three of you, I think, aren't you? Who have all been in the Premier League 20 years ago, and part safeguarding your futures when you drop out of that league. There'll be other teams that obviously drop out the Premier League. You look at someone like Forest at the moment, not suggesting they are in any trouble. But I don't know, could they get in a financial mess if they go down and are under strict penalties, etc.? This is what an independent regulator is for. I presume every Reading fan would be fairly desperate for this to get pushed through as quickly as possible, no?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because as I say, the EFL as it stands at the moment don't have the power to do a whole lot, really.
What can they do?
Well, they've imposed several fines on Dai Young, which he hasn't obviously hasn't paid.
So he now owes them a lot of money as well, doesn't he? He's not just obviously in debt with a football club. He now owes them money as well.
That's right. So they've been doing that. They can bar him from being a director, so i.e. he wouldn't get a say in terms of, you know, our seat on the EFL committee or anything like that. But I mean, he doesn't care about that.
Nah,
he
of
doesn't
course you
he
don't.
doesn't care he doesn't care if he can vote at an EFL meeting. So that's all they can do, really. It's they can stop him being part of the EFL, they can stop the club being part of the EFL, but they can't forcibly remove Reading FC PLC from him as an asset. They don't have the power to do that.
Is there any hard deadline here in terms of a sale of the club? Is there a breaking point here? Or should the neutral fan who might have concerns for you, should we be relaxed that your man, Michael Howe, did you say?
Nigel Howe,
that Nigel Howe's on board and the club itself also come out and said, look, we are trying to sell the club. Should neutrals be calm about it? Or is there a point here where this gets too scary?
Well, the thing is, we've just had the January transfer window, right? So we've managed to raise some money through player sales, which is allowing us to keep the lights on and pay the bills. Because, you know, late last year, sort of October, November, December, it was an ongoing worry each month. Like, is everybody going to get paid? Because each time players are paid late, that's another points deduction. So that was happening towards the back end of last year. We've raised some money through player sales now, and that seems to be keeping things going. So I suppose the worry is that that money then runs out, and then we're back where we were in sort of October, November, where there's no cash left in any UK accounts, and we're relying on him putting his own money in to pay wages to, you know, keep the lights on, as it were. If we get to that point again, and there still hasn't been a sale, then we're just going to be back to the position where people aren't getting paid, and the club just isn't functioning.
And that leads to points deductions and inevitable relegations in the long term. Yep. But relegations mean kind of what you said near the start. You still keep your football club, right? Mm. That's what no one wants is Bury again, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the ultimate first case to say if the money we've raised in January runs out and it still isn't sold, then it's difficult to see how we don't go into administration and possibly even liquidation. But again, the big concern is that Dai Young isn't worried if that happens. The worry is that he's kind of almost just waiting for that. So once the football club's wound up, he can sell the training ground, he can sell all the land around the stadium, and then it's all done.
But it also felt like when we'd looked at it previously, it was like it was getting badly advised on signing players. I mentioned Walcott as a potential example. It was getting speculated on. And I think he'd had a few agents were in his ear and were manipulating the club for their own benefit, and he seemed to be going with it. There was certainly a stage here where... I don't even want to say necessarily best intentions, but he certainly was spending money on the club. Yeah. Are we aware now if that funding has just completely ceased to exist? Does he basically not exist in respect of his leadership of Reading Football Club? Or is he still putting money in?
It seems that way. I mean, it seems like he's not anymore. It felt like he must have put some money in the summer. He must have done to appoint Ruben Sellers to, we managed to regain our Category 1 Academy status in the summer as well. So there must have been some money that was put into that. But yeah, I think since the summer, but this is part of what's come out in communications recently. I think in the same statement probably that you read that said, you know, there are 7 or 8 interested parties. I think part of that statement also said that there was an admission that he'd been a bit sort of... not really sure if he wanted to sell the club or not, but he is now committed to doing it. And to be fair, I say the appointment of Nigel Howe does suggest that that's probably true.
It's a chasing the dream, isn't it? Me and Suj speak about it a lot. It's chasing the dream of hitting this promised land of the Premier League for financial gain or whatever that is, being able to sell at a bigger price or make more money, whatever it is. The amount of, that's the biggest thing about the independent regulator. It's almost trying to stop what happens before it does. It's not just to think about making sure this doesn't happen again, i.e. you've got an owner there who can potentially walk away from the club. It's almost like doesn't have anybody running it. It's about picking up the signs before they happen and locking down turnover v wages and stuff like that and putting, this is where PSR, FFP, whatever it is down at the EFL level has got to have more teeth, because we know the majority of the clubs are spending way more on salaries than what their actual income is.
100%.
I think yours has been 200% at certain points, I think. as in 200% spend of your turnover on just salaries.
Yeah, I think 220% was the worst
wow.
it got to. And this is part of the frustration we've got as well with the EFL, because I know you've covered this on other pods, but before he bought Reading, he'd been rejected the chance to buy Hull City by the Premier League. The Hull were in the Premier League at the time, and the Premier League said, no chance, we're not having this guy running a Premier League club. And yet the EFL, A, have let him in, and B, I mean, when he came in, our wages to turnover, they weren't good. you know, our debt wasn't good. And not only did they let him in, but they came in and they let him make it worse. They let him make it worse. You know, so, I mean, eventually we got to a point where they said, right, this is silly. You're under a transfer embargo. You're not signing any more players. You're not recontracting any players above a certain wage level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine. But that should have happened the day he walked in the door. You know, we shouldn't have walked in the door before at all, but you know what I'm saying? It's twofold. A, they let him in, and B, they let him make a bad situation even worse before they actually started to do anything. And that's what I've kind of struggled to comprehend, really.
And when did you go down for the championship? Was it last year or the year before?
Last year. Down, yeah.
So we must have done a pod, I'm going to say, 2 years ago. I remember we called it the Royal Gamble. This isn't even the second time we've done Reading here. It's the third time, I think. It might even be four. We called it the Royal Gamble. And we could foresee then, just looking at the club, it was like, you're going up now or you're so fucked.
Mm, yeah.
We can see that on the outside. Now, at that point, I don't know if it's too far gone for the EFL to intervene. But even at that point, chasing the dream, and I think you were in the playoff places at one point, might have even been in the top two the year before. To stop it there and then and say you need to stop. But the reality is, it's like the famous Villa Derby game, isn't it? If Derby went up instead of Villa, where would Villa be now? And maybe Derby would be where Villa are. Nobody knows. And Derby are obviously at your level now. And that's why the gamble was there, right? It was like, gamble the club's future. And if it gets in the Premier League, it will sort itself out because of the huge revenue streams of what comes there. The problem is you gamble with it, and there's so many gamblers down there in like the championship and stuff, that if it doesn't work out, this is what happens.
Exactly, yeah.
And something's got to put a lid on that. I also understand and respect, probably wider conversation, it's a balancing act between keeping the league competitive and making sure no one does what happens to Reading.
Mm.
So, for example, you know, your owners at Stoke are obviously minted through Bet365 and that, but can't really do shit, right? Mm. Because of restrictions on them. Whereas the teams who come down from the Premier League, obviously highly likely to go back up. We've seen that this year.
Yeah.
Admittedly, the three clubs who come down were big enough that you would have expected them all to go back. Might not be quite the case next year. But yeah, there's a balancing act, and I suppose that's the dilemma the EFL face. Is do we keep this competitive, or what's the priority? Is it keeping the league competitive, or is it making sure this doesn't happen to clubs like Reading?
Yeah, I suppose there's a bit of that. I think the frustration is that, let's say, when he came in, the financial situation already wasn't great, but also, we didn't need to spend £7 million on Sonny Aluko to be competitive in the championship. We didn't need to spend £5 million on George Puskas. You know, we've got good academy players. We had you know, a reasonable team.
It's the salaries. So, you have people in there on like nearly £40,000 a week and stuff.
Exactly. So this is my gripe. You know, how have the EFL signed those transfers off? How have they allowed that to happen when the club, as I say, already was over 100% of wages to turnover? You know, I don't know. Their intervention came way, way too late, is my complaint, I suppose. And also, once they did start to intervene, there's a number of things that didn't make sense. Like, you know, for example, we lost Michael Olise to Palace for £9 million, which was effectively his academy release clause. Now, we weren't allowed to offer Olise a new contract. You know, and the season before he left, we were in, say, we were pushing for promotion. We were in the playoff places. I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that Michael Olise might have signed a new contract that season that had a bigger release clause, and a clause that says, you know, if we do make it, massive pay rise, et cetera, et cetera. So
Why could he not sign a new contract, by the way? Did you weren't
because
allowed to register or?
we weren't allowed to offer improved terms for anybody. So we lost Michael Olise for a pittance on that. There's just things like that where I think common sense could be applied. You know, if Michael Olise was agreeable to it, why couldn't we have gone to the EFL? So we've got a valuable asset here that's willing to sign a new contract. It'll mean we can get double the transfer fee for him in the summer if we don't go up, and that kind of thing. And there's things like take John Swift, for example, a player that was with us on big money. We're under a transfer embargo, so we can't replace him. So we keep him because he's a player that can keep us in the division. So we pay John Swift massive wages for 2 years longer than we probably ought to have done, rather than being able to say, okay, well, let's get 3 million quid for him. We'll sign a replacement for 1 million on a quarter of the wages. And then John Swift's contract is then gone. We've banked two and a half million quid, and we can move on. But because we're not allowed to sign anybody, we're not allowed to, you know, we're not allowed to replace him. We just keep him on his massive contract because otherwise, what else are we going to do? There's just things like that that don't make sense in the way that the EFL have sort of dealt with this.
Yeah, it sounds like the EFL can't get involved too much. We're relying on the word of others to suggest that talks really are happening with the club. And we're at a bit of a kind of impasse in terms of what's happening until it just be one day, yep, someone's got the club. I'm very much convinced that I think the club will be all right. That's what I said in the summer, because I think the proposition of attractiveness of someone investing in your club would be way higher with respect than it was for someone like Bury competing with 10 other smaller clubs in the Northwest when you've already got the Manchesters, the Liverpools and Evertons, etc., in that sort of catchment area. I think the close proximity to London, the stadium, what you said about the academy, I think my only fear would be if that 28-day period did get invoked where they took it off him, it's like someone's got to buy in that period. I bet you it wouldn't happen till quite late in the day. Like the deal will probably go through on day 27. No one's going to pay the top dollar at the start. They're going to try and get the best deal for themselves in trying to do it. And there is a danger that if it goes that late, if something breaks down, then you've got a major problem. But I think the club would probably be okay. One question before we finish, though. And it's not a criticism of Reading supporters. The Supporters Trust or the Sell Before We Die campaign on socials is great and very clever. When you were pushing for promotion a couple of years ago, were the concerns being raised then?
Yeah, there were, to be fair. I mean, obviously you'll always get the sort of section of fans that just see, oh, this is brilliant. We're signing George Puskás, we're signing Mateo Vidra, we're signing Sonny Aluko. You know, we're showing ambition, all that kind of thing, and you'll see things, you know, everybody going mad about all the new signings on Twitter. But yeah, I mean, for me, and I know for a large number of Reading fans, there was concern. We knew basically what you were saying in your Royal Gamble podcast. You know, we all knew that. You know, we're not daft. We knew that was a possibility, and sort of here we are. And obviously we know the stories of Portsmouth and Bolton and other clubs. So yeah, it was a concern. I suppose what can you do though in that situation? You've just got to support the team and hope it pays off. And what else can you do?
No, I get it. I get it. That's what it's not a criticism.
Yeah.
It's just, it's easy to say that the horse has bolted on the EFL and they're obviously clearly massively at fault, predominantly for letting this guy in the fucking football club in the first instance. But it is, as a general rule of thumb, sort of 90% of football fans, we'll just go on the journey of, oh, we're spending money, da 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 da. And that's why I think not just in terms of independent regulators safeguard, but it's actually having intelligent fans within these football clubs in terms of fan advisory boards, etc., who could take a step back and realize their responsibilities and say, I think we might be going beyond our means here, is also going to be a massive help. That importance of actual, you can say most fans won't see it, but if you've got a responsibility within the football club and you're in talks, you can say, why are you spending this money? Oh, we're chasing the dream. Yeah, but you safeguarding the club's future. That's it. A lot of it's now with fan advisory stuff. It's like, well, we're going to protect the heritage. We're going to protect the club colours, not have what happened to Cardiff. And we're going to protect the badge, and the badge won't change. But a lot of it's got to be, I think, a responsibility from fans to go in and say, stop spending some fucking money and think about the future. Because, as well, with respect, Reading had a few years in the Premier League, did great, and you played some really nice football the first year you were up. Nearly all of us will remember that. But you've never been perceived, certainly from my perspective, as a football club that you go, they're chasing their tail like a Derby did. Like, you're a family club, basically, right? So the future of the club and what it stands for within the town is way more important.
Oh, of course, yeah. Like Reading are one of those clubs that people kind of like to take the mickey out of, tin pot Reading with their identity kit stadium and all
The
that kind of thing. But
Waitrose.
yeah, all
You were
that
my
kind of
wife's
stuff.
favourite team for a while. She said, I like them. They must be up a marquee. I said, yeah, they're struggling now, babe.
Yeah, I mean there's all that kind of stuff that goes around, which but at the end of the day, for the fans of the club, just like any club, it's the most important thing. It doesn't matter if you're Reading or Yeovil Town or whatever club. To those fans, it is everything. It doesn't matter how many of them there are. Reading, we're 152 years old. We're one of the oldest clubs in the country. And it's yeah, the situation we've got to, it was avoidable. It's avoidable, I think. And that's what's difficult to stomach, I suppose. And that's what again, that's a big part of what Sell Before We Die are all about. This was avoidable. These are what we think you should be doing to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Good luck, mate. Thank you so much for that. Have we missed anything?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, mate. Thank you.
Good stuff. Anything you want to plug before you go, in terms of maybe even few people to keep an eye on in terms of Reading accounts or anything?
If you want to follow the story, the Sell Before We Die have got their own Twitter account. Tilehurst End, Talk Reading, they're all great Twitter accounts. If you want to follow the story, I think those are the main three that I'd recommend.
Good stuff, Martin. Pleasure. Thank you so much, my friend, and good luck to the Royals for this season and beyond, mate.
Thank
So you're
you.
back with me tomorrow for differential show game week 24 preview. That feels roughly around about right. How you doing in Gaffer, by the way, mate?
I think I'm about 40th at the moment.
Oosh.
Not too bad. Four,
Yeah,
four, yeah, all
mine's
right, yeah.
mine's. Similar, just got an extra zero on the end. That's all, mate.
Okay.
Brilliant.
You got three new boosts to play with, so have a look at that and have some fun
Yeah,
with them,
well, I need them, mate. I'll have to have a look. Martin, absolutely brilliant. Thanks so much, mate. Cue music,
Cheers.
please, Manchild.
Fantasy Football Show.